Thank you so much, Buzz, for being with me today on the Wave Capital's guest speaker series on relationship building in a team environment. You're my 95th guest on my podcast.
Wow.
How are you today, Buzz Peterson, my fellow University of North Carolina Tar Heel?
Gary, I'm doing well. Thanks for having me on. I'm looking forward to our conversation.
Yes, absolutely. Well, you were the, you know, high school player of the year in North Carolina in 1981. And another gentleman by the name of Michael Jordan learned about that and said, wait a second, Buzz Peterson's the high school player of the year in North Carolina. What about me, right?
Always tell him I got something on him right there with that. But, you know, when it, as we all, the ones that can remember Michael from way back in the late 70s, early 80s, tremendous athlete. It's just a matter of time till he got to hone his skills on one sport, besides baseball or football, whatever. But he, you know, once he got to Chapel Hill, he got better and better. And even though he said, I got to be better than Buzz every day, I always told him, I wish you'd have told me that. But, you know, either one of us were going to start the two guard there for that national championship team. But yes, you know, he was more in high school, Lanny, probably more of a 6'3", 6'4", post player. And I was playing on a perimeter at 6'3", 6'4". So, and we grew up opposite ends of the state. He was on the coast. I was in the mountains. I never played against each other during high school at all. Teams never met.
And I look forward to delving more into the backstory and all that. And the fact that you both won national championship together, as well as another guest on my podcast, Matt Doherty. And I was telling you offline that another former player under head coach Roy Williams at the University of Kansas, Rex Walters, was also on my podcast. And Rex, like you, worked for the Hornets, and you were the interim general manager before Mitch Kupchak became the full-time general manager. And Rex also was an assistant coach for the Hornets. I also had Fred Whitfield on, as I was telling you offline, and I met Fred and Michael 20 years ago at the 2005 Hoopty Celebrity Golf Classic. And I'm so proud to have people on my podcast who are graduates of the university, but also to hear your story, Buzz, about your life playing for Dean Smith, playing with Michael Jordan. You know, just basketball has been a main part of your life, but outside of basketball, just as a business leader, a community leader growing up in North Carolina, and really being, you know, one of the key integral pieces of, you know, North Carolina school legacy and basketball legacy. And also want to talk to you about your family. And, you know, we were talking offline as well about, you know, you transitioning from North Carolina to Tennessee. When you think of relationship building, Buzz, in a team environment, what does it mean to you? And what has it meant for your professional career?
It's a key, that leadership, team building, all that stuff. It's basically a two-way street. A lot of times, you know, you're leaders sometimes always said on it. When you have a bat, when I was coaching, I felt like if I had a leader within my team, those 15 players or whatever, if I had someone in that group that could lead them, it was more impactful than a coach. Because as a player, I remember in my freshman year at North Carolina, Jimmy Black held a meeting, and they had just lost to Indiana in the final game in Philadelphia. That's when I think the day Reagan got shot and everything. So things we remember, but I remember Jimmy holding a meeting, Grandma Towers. He said, hey, look, Coach Smith is getting a lot of undue press that saying he can't win the big one, or he can't get to the, you know, all that stuff. And so our goal is to win it, not to win it just to, you know, win the ACC, whatever. We want to win that, but we want to win the national championship. So, you know, when you hear a teammate talk about that, and that's what you could see in his eyes, what he wanted and what the upperclassmen wanted, well, your heart, you sink everything in it. You know, when I became a head coach, I tried to find out one or two players that I could develop that relationship with, have a good relationship with them on and off the floor, that I could trust them and they could lead that team. And I think if you go back, Garrett, and you look at a lot of teams, whatever it is, if it's baseball, hockey, soccer, whatever, I bet you you're going to find somebody within that team on that roster that has tremendous leadership skills. And they're hard to find. In my years in 01 to 05 at Tennessee, I was trying to find that leader within that team. It was tough. And I went back and took a young man, Dane Bradshaw, who was at White Station in Memphis, who won three state high school championships. And I took a young man like him because he was a leader and he was a winner, because winning all those games. And so I wanted that winning product. So It's, you know, some people just have that winner mentality instilled, and they don't settle for anything less. But it's not something you just turn a light switch on and say, all right, there's a leader. I'm going to make you a leader. No, no. It's something that a lot of people are born with, and you have to work with them.
Yes, absolutely. And how much did Dean Smith, and, you know, you could ask this to anyone from Michael Jordan all the way down to any player, how much did he mean to you, Buzz? You know, just from a one-to-one personal relationship, obviously he's going to impact every player individually and collectively of all his teams over his 36 years as a head coach, and even the 3 years when he was an assistant under Frank McGuire. So, I mean, he was at the program for 39 years, nearly four decades. And I mean, how many people, you know, look at Dean Smith or looked at Dean Smith as a second father? You know, he could be somebody's uncle. He could be somebody's neighbor. He could be somebody's business associate, someone who could be your pastor at the church. I mean, he was that much of a transformative figure. So what did he mean to you in your upbringing? You know, looking at him, of all the mentors you've had, I'm sure he was one of your key mentors. You know, what did he mean to you because of Dean Smith, how he changed your life for the better, winning that national championship, playing for him? And then you look at your life, you know, all the way to today, how much did he make Buzz Peterson for who he is today?
Well, number one, you went there because you thought, you knew you were getting the best, one of the best coaches in the world. So you knew somebody that's very smart. What you heard, you knew that somebody had the best interest for you. And it's not only Coach Smith, it was Coach Guthridge, it's Coach Fogler, it's Coach Wims. Those guys, you just felt like the whole staff had the best interest in you. So you feel like you're going to bust your rear end every single day for those guys. Because in the day, basketball is important, but it's not everything. There's other things in this world that go around, and it's your, you know, whether it's your family or anything going on, it's very important. And Coach Smith, when I never forget when I was done, and I'm sure every player can pretty much say this, that, you know, he'd sit down with you and said, what do you have interest in? What do you want to do? You worked hard here for 4 years for us. You got your education, got your degree. What do you want to do? I knew I wasn't going to play professionally. I had this knack. I just want to scout. I wasn't sure I wanted to coach, but I wanted to scout. And I wanted to scout the highest level. But at that time, back in the mid-80s, a lot of the NBA scouts, weren't a whole lot, but they were former head coaches and everything. So, you know, that's when I got started helping Bob Gibbons out the scouting service. But Coach just had that interest in his players, and he treated them like family. And you could say the same thing with Coach Guthridge. You know, he had the same thing, Coach Fogler, Coach Wims, and all those guys, I'd run through a brick wall for all of them. And to this day, I still talk to, I saw Coach Fogler last week, sat down and talked with him. I talked to Coach Wims probably once or twice a month. So it's just, I felt like, even though I was a basketball player, they had the best interest for my life and my future. And when somebody does that, I mean, because we all need somebody to help us get to where we want to get to. You're just not going to step in and get to a job you want. But they were, any move I made in coaching, I would call Coach Smith and say, hey, what do you think, Coach? Can you make this call for me? And Coach Fogler did the same thing for me. Coach Williams did the same thing. So I've had other friends that played in high division programs, and I've heard them say, man, Buzz, that's pretty neat. That's pretty special that your coaches care so much about you to this day than they did back when you were playing. He said, you know, I played for 4 years and I never hear from my coach or anything or my coaches, but they always kept an interest. And it's why it's, you know, North Carolina's built like that, and the program and everything, the family atmosphere and all that stuff. When I see another former Tar Heel, I mean, it's, to me, it's automatically, that's family. That's a close friend.
And it's truly remarkable. I mean, I'm so proud to be a graduate of the university from the UNC Hussman School of Journalism and Media. But there are families within families. And, you know, you are part of the Carolina men's basketball family that has the most rich tradition with respect to college basketball. I mean, ESPN ranked, you know, the University of North Carolina as the number one program in the last 50 years. But that was a poll from, you know, several years back. But, you know, when you think of Duke University, our rival, Tobacco Road rival, when you think of UCLA, when you think of these other Titan type of programs, Michigan State and others, Villanova, you look at what North Carolina was able to accomplish decade after decade after decade. You know, University of Kansas, University of Kentucky. I mean, Roy Williams has the relationship with University of Kansas, just like Dean Smith did when he won a national championship, winning for the University of Kansas himself. And just whether I talking to you, talking to Coach Doherty, you know, having the privilege of meeting Coach Williams as well. This was in 2016, and it was just less than a week after the heartbreaking loss where we lost the national championship at the buzzer by Chris Jenkins' three-pointer in the 2016 national championship. And obviously the next year was the Redeem team where we won in 2017 against Gonzaga. But it told me a lot about who Coach Williams was. And you can speak to that. I would love to know from your perspective, you know, how much Coach Williams, as well as Coach Smith, but how much Coach Williams and yes, Coach Fogler and others, how much they meant to you. Because, you know, Coach Williams, meeting him told me a lot that for how many coaches who still don't mind being in the public eye, who don't mind meeting people, shaking people's hands, getting pictures with people. My father and I, you know, we got a picture with him. I walked up to introduce myself, said I was a graduate. I said, congratulations on an amazing season. It's an honor to meet you. But knowing that he had that pain from losing that game from just several days before, but that he could compartmentalize and still know that, hey, at the end of the day, it's just a game. And, you know, he was going to, you know, spend the time in Mount Pleasant, South Carolina with his wife, Wanda. And, you know, that's, you know, like a retreat for him. That's his vacation home. But that he was willing to go out of his way to meet people in the community who look up to admire him. So when you think of someone like Coach Williams, especially him being a young assistant and he being more of a like a player's coach, you know, where he's working with young players like you and Michael and Sam Perkins and James Worthy, Jimmy Black, Matt Doherty, and everyone else. How much was Coach Williams instrumental in that 82 national championship game? And, you know, just talk more about your friendships with, you know, Coach Williams and Coach Fogler and all the staff and what those relationships mean to you, even in 2025.
If you go back to watch the practices, what I remember so much was Coach Smith was the dominant voice. If there was a second voice, it had been Coach Guthridge. Coach Fogler and Coach Williams, to credit those two guys, they soaked up all that information. You know, that's part going back to leadership. Good leaders are also very good listeners. You have to listen what other folks are saying sometimes. Sometimes you believe them, sometimes you don't, but sometimes you can soak up some information because we all kind of learn from each other along the way. But I think Coach Williams, especially, was a tremendous listener under Coach Smith. Listen what Coach Fogler, Coach Guthridge were saying because he was the youngest on the staff, and he parlays that to Kansas and brings it back to Chapel Hill and with national championships. While sitting there for years, just listening to what's being said. So with the great relationship with all those guys, especially Coach Williams and Coach Fogler, are tremendous because you're always a sounding board for them. There's times now where I may call both of them and I need some help with something. Can they make a phone call for me? Can they help me do this? And, you know, without hesitation, they do it. It's remarkable. So it's something that's pretty neat. I feel very blessed and fortunate that I had men like that, that I could look up to. And to this day, there's two men I can call if I need help with anything. So it's truly a blessing to go there. But, you know, when I was growing up in North Carolina, I remember I was a young kid. Before I was 10, my family moved to a little town called Hickory, North Carolina. And our neighbor was a pharmacist who went to University of Chapel Hill in pharmacy school. And he brought back a media guide. And I went to that media guide and I just kind of fell in love and I started looking at the players in there and I got to know them. And then I fell in love with the socks that had the numbers on the side. And at this point, things, we didn't get to wear those. And I would say they did away with them. But, you know, I just kind of fell in love with North Carolina then at a young age because it was Jefferson Pilot games. They came on maybe once or twice a week and I really wanted to watch those. So to have men like that to stand in your corner and you can call nowadays is pretty special. And it's just not that. You know, basketball was something that brought us all together, but there's so many other things it's bounced to that are more important than just the basketball. But it's amazing what the game of basketball does for the circle that you have within the friends you meet with it. It's pretty neat. And it's as I moved into the Hornets and the pro side to see the international side of it, it's pretty remarkable. how other countries are, how much they love and everything, and how much they've improved and knowledge of the game and how much better they've gotten. Because I used to remember when I was playing at North Carolina, Coach Smith would have some international head coaches come in, and those guys were learning and taking that back to their countries and giving that information helped them out a lot. So anyway, the relationships with those coaches is something that I don't take for granted.
Of course, and this is the Wave Capital's guest speaker series on relationship building and team environment, speaking with Buzz Peterson. And Buzz, I mean, relationship building, as I always say, is the essence of humanity. And you're speaking about, you know, relationship building at the highest levels. I mean, in the Carolina basketball family and then just, you know, life in general, it's all about relationships. And I love the fact that, you know, you can call up Coach Williams, call up Coach Fogler, and that you're family and that they'll do anything for you and you would do anything for them. And obviously can't forget Coach Guthridge and what he meant to you all and Coach Williams and Dean Smith and Eddie Fogler. And, you know, the fact that even after Coach Smith retired, I mean, Coach Guthridge had the best 3-year run of any short tenured head basketball coach, you know, 2 Final Fours in 3 years and just carrying on that tradition. It is truly amazing. And, you know, and then talk about the loyalty too, because I mean, for Coach Williams, he had the opportunity to come back in, you know, the year 2000, but he wanted to show loyalty to the program at the University of Kansas. And, you know, he promised his players that he would coach them all 4 years that they were there. And then Matt Doherty had his 3-year run. And then obviously, you know, Coach Williams comes in, and then in 2005 was the first of 3 national championships and keeping up with that stellar Carolina basketball tradition. But in the time that you were coaching at the college level, you know, I lived in Wilmington, and I know that you coached the Seahawks. Mm-hmm. I obviously lived in Chapel Hill when I went to school there, but I also lived in Raleigh, and you were an assistant for 3 years at NC State. And those were the post Jim Valvano years. And I just had Mark Gottfried recently on my podcast, and he talked about his rivalries against, you know, Coach K and Coach Williams and him coaching at NC State and having great success there. And because you have a history at NC State too, did you ever think that you would end up, you know, being affiliated with, you know, NC State's program? And what was that like, you know, knowing that, hey, I'm a Chapel Hill guy and I'm coaching in Raleigh?
It was different for sure. I'll tell you how the story went. I was at Appalachian State coaching as a part-time assistant. And believe me, it's part-time, no benefits. And you make about $500 a month for 9 straight months. That's it. Well, it was $533. My rent was $500. So I had $33 to live on each month. But anyway, Dave Hanners was the assistant at East Tennessee State with Les Robinson. And he worked with Alan LaForce there. Well, Dave left and went to North Carolina as assistant. Well, Les, you know, a former player at North Carolina State, had a relationship with Coach Smith. He said, I just want to get your opinion. Dave did such a tremendous job for us. Is there anybody you recommend? And my name popped up. And so Les called me and picked him up at Asheville Airport. He's flying in from Charleston, and we drove him up to John City, spent the night with him. And I guess 3 or 4 weeks might have went by, but he did offer me the job. And so I went to East Tennessee State. So basically, Dave did a great job recruiting him and Coach LaForce and Coach Robinson. Then Les got the job at NC State. So I'll never forget this because, you know, we really didn't talk about it a lot because we had a pretty good team at East Tennessee State. And I'm in the car with Alan LaForce. We're sitting there. We went to lunch. We got back. We're in the park lot. My phone rang. I'll never forget this in front of the dome in Johnson City. And it was Coach Robinson. And we were talking. I said, Coach, congratulations. It's like he just had his press conference. It might have been late, you know, the next day, whatever. He said, thanks, da-da-da, all this stuff. He said, hey, look, it's crazy, it's very busy, but I need you. He said, I need you here in Raleigh with me. I said, to me, be assistant at NC State? He said, yes. He said, look, there's people, a lot of people have crossed over. You know, there's many people have done it and everything. So I really think you could help us. But what I want you to do is, before you think of me anymore, call Coach Smith. And so I went in my office, I called Coach Smith, and we talked about it. He said, hey, if Les has offered you this opportunity to be assistant coach in the ACC at, I think I was 27, 26, something like that. He says, you better jump on the opportunity. And this is a great opportunity for you. You know, at the time, now you had Todd Turner, who played golf at North Carolina, was the athletic director. And his right-hand man, the number one assistant AD, was Eric Hyman, who played football at North Carolina. So I didn't feel that bad. But anyway, went over there. I was there for 3 years, and it was great because, you know, it's Les is a tremendous person. I mean, people that know Les Robson, this nobody says a bad thing about him. Just a great human being and a great coach. And so after my conversation with Coach Smith to get his blessings, I felt good about it and everything, and worked my hardest I could at NC State to make them competitive against everybody in the ACC. So, but you know, after there for 3 years, I had an opportunity to go to Vanderbilt from there as associate head coach, and the AD was Paul Houlihan, who I think now is a Sugar Bowl director, has been for years, and he played football at North Carolina. So he was my strength coach when I was there my first several years at Chapel Hill. So anyway, it's kind of a circle, family circle, whatever. Anyway, that's how that all kind of orchestrated a little bit, coaching NC State.
I love how you can draw different times of your life and the relationships that are all connected, the 6 degrees of separation, even within the North Carolina basketball circles. And I just love hearing from you how every person you're identifying in your story, that the person had a significant role at North Carolina.
I want to tell you about it's coaching the state was it's pretty interesting. I can't remember. It was the year that Desert Storm broke out.
91, I believe.
91. You're right, 91. Anyway, we had won a big game. And we're sitting there in the office the next day, and it's Wendell Murphy's in there, big supporter. Chancellor Monteith is in there. And Wendell says, you know what? He looked at me and says, I got a gift for you. It's over at Cameron Village. He said, I think Miss Sparks, Beverly Sparks, is going to pick it up for you. But the next time we play Chapel Hill in North Carolina, I want you to wear it. And so I'm thinking, what is it? Is it a hat or whatever? It was a red sport coat. And so she went and picked it up, brought it to me, and I think it was, I don't know, we were supposed to play, we were playing North Carolina, with Desert, we were in Chapel Hill, the game was a 9 o'clock game on a Wednesday night, I believe, and I remember standing on the court, and didn't have the coat on at the time, because I was helping rebound and warm up for the players, and Chancellor Monteith came down and stands, says, where's Les? I said, in the locker room. That's when they postponed that game, because it was kind of geared, it was kind of eerie a little bit, because you're out there 45 minutes before, nobody's kind of in the stands. And when everybody was on the concourse watching the news of breaking out of the war, because you had, at that time, we had a young man, Anthony Thompson, who's no longer with us. His father was in the war, and Pete Chilcutt's brother. And so we postponed the game to back to February. And to go back, if you look at it, we played Chapel Hill. We played in Raleigh, and the next night we played in Chapel Hill back-to-back nights because we couldn't find it in the schedule. And I wore the red coat at home. The students loved it and everything, clapped. The next day I had to wear it in Chapel Hill. Can you imagine that red coat standing out, all that blue and everything? I'm sure people were pissed at me in those stands and whatever. But, hey, I'm just doing what the people giving my check to wear. But I don't know where that coat is. I'd be interested where that red coat is. I can't find it anymore. We moved so much.
Were you pleasantly surprised that when you coached at NC State for 3 years as an assistant that, you know, people welcomed you with open arms despite being a Tar Heel? Because at the end of the day, you were hired to help NC State. And although your basketball allegiance as a player and as a graduate was with UNC, you have to form a new allegiance, you know, especially in the time that you were with NC State. But were you pleasantly surprised how welcoming?
People are friendly in some parts. Some people get mad sometimes, may say some stuff, but I bet there's one person. I bet Roy Williams, he probably slapped me. He probably hit me and said, what are you thinking? I mean, it's a rivalry for him. I mean, he's always been that way. He'd have probably told me something else. But anyway, he said, you have to do this. It's important for your future.
Yeah, that's wonderful. And I know that you only had 1 year at Tulsa, but you were crowned NIT champions. Talk about that, you know, magical season at Tulsa where you won the NIT championship.
Yeah, that was, we were App State and we'd won 3 out of 4, gosh, regular season championships. And, you know, back then you had Davidson College of Charleston. It was a good league. And I got that job late. It was in June. Interesting how the domino effect works. What happened was Izzo turned down the Hawks job. Lonnie Kruger took the Hawks job from Illinois, and Bill Self left Tulsa and went to Illinois. And then I interviewed, and I interviewed late, Garrett. It was a late process. So they more likely you hire the assistant, which is Roberts has been on Bill Self's staff for years. And I hired a couple other people. I went in there. Listen how I got involved in that job.
Because you're at App State.
The CEO of the Southwest Airlines got the job at Tulsa as a president. And he was involved in this with Judy McLeod, who is now the commissioner of Commerce USA. And they were talking to Krzyzewski and through a list of people. And my name surfaced. And, he recruited me out of high school and everything. And he says, you need to interview him. If you can get him, you better do it. And so I went out there for interview. I remember flying out of Asheville, went on a private plane, came back, and my wife and kids picked me up because we were taking a vacation down to Hilton Head. And we were headed down there. And back then, cell service was very sketchy. You know, you got your big antenna, it may hit here or there, whatever. So we had checked in his condo, and my wife went grocery shopping and everything. I had the kids. And then she got back. I looked down the phone. I looked in some missed calls. So I called her. It was Judy. She says, hey, I've been trying to get a hold of you this afternoon. Do you want this job? And I said, really? I said, you offered me? She said, yeah. And so immediately called Coach Smith, and I called and called a couple people. And long story short, ended up getting a job. And I would tell you, we didn't have really a chance to recruit a lot of people. Bill Self and his staff, Billy Gillespie, Norm Roberts, those guys did a tremendous job of recruiting. And we were left with these guys. And believe it or not, if I stayed, a lot of those guys were coming back. And John Phillips, my assistant, took the job. And they went, you have to look this up, they might have went lead eight the following year. But we won NIT, and we final game, conference tournament. This is when Tark was at Fresno, and we lost to Riley Wallace, I believe, was coach of Hawaii at the time. And we had the lead. They missed a shot, got to rebound. A kid knocked it in. They beat us in overtime. And then we went to the NIT and went on a roll, beat Cal Urban at home, won at Mississippi State, won at Minnesota, and beat Memphis and Alabama in New York City. And I just had some hungry kids, Garrett. They were these guys, they were undersized. And that I remember through the whole season what was interesting. That's when Coach Smith was retired. And about every four or five games, our film guy had to send film to Coach Smith, and he wanted to review some stuff. And then we get on the phone and talk. So we did, and we got upset in that championship game. I got a call from him the next day. He said, look, get your head up. You got a chance to win the NIT championship. It's a great tournament. He started talking about when Bill Chamberlain won it in 72, da-da-da, all this stuff. And that's the hardest game you ever coach, is that first round of NIT. When you think you should go into the NCAA tournament and you got to get these guys ready for the NIT, that's a tough motivation game. And I had to get these kids up. But Coach Smith was sending me information we were going over because we changed the way we were playing offensively. We were kind of more of an open post area. We were doing a lot of dribble drives, a lot of baseline drill passes, what people back then didn't do. And his mind is just a little ahead of the games always. And so we took what Coach Smith was giving me and installed it in this team and won the NIT championship. So I give him and Bill Self a lot of credit for us winning that. But I had some great kids.
Of course. And do people underestimate the NIT only because, you know, every year only a certain number obviously can compete in the NCAA tournament. And the ones who make it to the NIT, really great teams. I mean, it's really, a loss or, just however seeding that year, really determines, who gets in, who doesn't, strength of schedule and, conference play and all those factors come into play. But because you recognized and, were told that this is going to be the toughest game you're going to coach, and you refer to it as a motivation game, because those teams are hungry. They're hungry. They want to prove to the country that, hey, we were just as good to go into the NCAA tournament. And, make no mistake, I mean, there's a reason why we're competing for the NIT championship. I mean, I'm sure you're very proud knowing that, you were able to, take them all the way.
I am. And I really believe it helped them for the following year to get all that experience in Madison Square Garden against some Power Four conference teams and beat them. So that helped them. John Phillips did a tremendous job with them. These guys were just tough. They felt like they belonged. And then what Coach Smith, I never forget one of my assistants, because when I sat down with Coach Smith, we're on a phone call, and I was writing X and O on a sheet of paper. Ed Conroy was with me. Ed's the head coach at Siddle now. And we were going over this. It's like an open post. One guy was in there, basically, and we were doing a lot of dribble action, replacing all this stuff. And Coach Smith sent a FedEx package the next day of everything he written down on his sheet of paper. When we got done, we won this. One of my assistant coaches came up to me, Al Daniel. We're really close friends. And he said, "Hey, Buzzy," that's what he called me. He says, "What's up with this offense you changed?" And I said, "Al, you think I invented that?" He says, "Well, somebody had to." I said, "This guy in Chapel Hill did." He said, "What?" So I told him the story. I brought my whole staff in. Ed knew, but the rest of them didn't know. And I said, "Hey, guys, this is why we're running this stuff." And it's what Coach Smith thought would be best for us, because we were playing bigger teams at bigger size. So we need to use our athletic ability and use the dribble drive to go. So you're talking about, I mean, those four pages of notes I still have, and I wouldn't give them away for nothing that he fed me. And so that just shows you, going back to relationships to this day, a coach is involved in one of his former players is coaching and motivating me to get my team ready for the NIT. And that was a big part of it. And it helped, you know, we won that. And then as I remember, Bob Huggins told me, I was in the hotel after we won that in the Final Four. He says, "Oh boy," he says, "NIT for a young coach like you," I guess I was 36 at the time or 37. He says, "You're going to have plenty of opportunities out here. You got plenty of opportunities out there right now." And that's when I think Tennessee was open, South Carolina and Wake Forest, all three of those jobs. And so that's when things springboarded from there.
And it's wonderful because, you know, each coaching stop that you had, I mean, you build relationships and you build a history and you build a culture in the time that you're there. And I mean, even for you, who was able to manage the Hornets at the NBA level, how much did it mean to you after your college coaching days that you were able to be in a managerial role for the Charlotte Hornets, you know, working with Michael, developing those players, those relationships, and, you know, Michael being your friend going back to 81-82 season, and him being your college roommate, and then life comes full circle that you're working with people like Michael and Fred and Seth Bennett. And then talk to me also about, what does your relationship with Michael Jordan mean to you? How special of a relationship that is, because of all the players that Michael played with at North Carolina and with the Chicago Bulls and the Washington Wizards, you are unique in the sense of the person in his life who actually roomed with him. That's a totally different experience. And being that you're young guys and coming out of high school and with egos, and, you know, you're the North Carolina Player of the Year. And that's something, like you said earlier, that you have that on them, you know, in a way, like, is that competitive drive, that competitive streak. But that there's a history there between two of you that not everybody can say that they have. And so what did it mean to you to work with him with the Hornets? And also, what is your relationship with Michael mean to you?
We all know, we've heard stories of Michael. He loves to win no matter what he's doing and everything. And so I've always, you know, for Michael's leadership skills and everything, Michael's leadership skills by example. I mean, when you're on the floor with him, or you're on a, whatever you're doing with him, you're on his team, you better be focused and be at your top level, because he loves to win no matter what. So, you know, there's leaders that can do speak a lot and do all that and do it through that way. And there's some that do by example, and he does it by example. And so I have a great relationship now. You know, working for him was fun. I enjoyed it. I mean, cause we talked a lot of basketball. I feel like he trusted me with what I thought of what we were doing on the floor. For his X and O wise, I felt like he trusted me for his evaluation of talent also. You know, this relationship goes back almost 45 years. So there's a lot that goes into that. It's just the basketball part. It's families and all that stuff, and that unique friendship. But, you know, when we met each other back in the dorm in Granville Towers, when I was senior in high school, we developed this relationship, and then we stayed in touch. We kind of made this promise to go play at the same school with one another. I feel like that would be a pretty unique thing that here's a guy that we kind of hit it all pretty easily, and we kept talking on the phone and everything. And, you know, then it gets to be competitive. I didn't realize, and I don't think any of us realized at the time, that he was going to turn out to be one of the greatest of all time to play the game of basketball. And I get asked all the time, would I have changed course? Would I have gone to Kentucky, that opportunity, or other schools? And I'd say no, because what I learned at North Carolina and the relationships, more than anything else, what it brought me is just invaluable. So, yeah, to this day, relationship with Michael, we, even though I'm not working for him now, we speak often just to check on one another. But we've had some fun moments throughout all the years and all that stuff, from playing golf to playing cards to playing basketball together. It's something that I don't take for granted. If anyone has ever lived, I think his dad might have said this, if anyone's ever lived a life, a dream life, you want to be a basketball player, man, the guy is really, you know, you think about it, you know, I mean, Olympian, he's won Olympics, he's won a NCAA championship, NBA championship. He's about, you know, besides the high school party, he's won it all and everything. And so, and he's done very well financially by taking part of basketball and moving it to another level and having a company within a company, and has done a tremendous job with that. So, very happy for him. And you know what's crazy? We roomed with him. We roomed together our freshman year. And then my sophomore year, I grew up with a guy named Brad Daugherty. We all know Brad. Yeah. Brad was 16 years old, Garrett, when he was coming to college. Coach Williams came to me and said, hey, look, I know you and Michael want a room together. Can Brad be your roommate and Michael be your suite mate, along with David Hart, which is a manager, student manager with David from Asheville also. So I said, you know, heck, got one of my best friends. I got two guys from my hometown area right there with me. So this would be perfect. So that's what happened. Then junior year, went back to roommate with Michael, and Brad got a little more comfortable there. And then Michael went to pros, and then Brad and I started rooming together again our senior year. So I always tell people, I said, you know what? I nailed it on my wife. I picked a tremendous lady there to marry. But the other thing is, I mailed the roommates also. So I had two really good roommates in college.
You know, that's awesome. I mean, that's such a wonderful story. And it's truly a blessing how, you know, really life unfolded for you, really in your formative years. I mean, you didn't know until you knew that, you know, your roommate and suite mate would be Michael Jordan. And then another Tar Heel legend, Brad Daugherty, too. And, you know, people from your hometown, which brought you a lot of comfort, you know, being that you were, you know, many miles away from Asheville and Chapel Hill. And it really also, you know, really helped you, I'm sure, form an identity and being an integral part of the team that and the great success that North Carolina had winning a national championship and then being there all 4 years. And, you know, when Michael did leave for the pros, what do you remember? I mean, it must have been a hard to fill that void, that presence no longer being there, but still obviously, you know, him coming back to Chapel Hill, and he's been a part of, you know, Chapel Hill forever. Every so often he's popping in Chapel Hill and he's keeping in touch with everybody, yourself. And he's still very much out there in terms of publicly, like he is synonymous with the program and he is always making sure that he is supporting the program in any which way. And he does that so publicly and privately, of course. But when he left for the pros, I mean, you know, what was the sentiment on campus? Bittersweet, I'm sure.
Yeah, I'll never forget it. I mean, we went to Red Lobster Eat the night before, the two of us. We're sitting there talking, but he really didn't want to talk much long about it because he didn't quite know what he was going to do. And we came back to the room, watched the show or something, went to bed. And then next morning, he'd leave early to go over for the press conference. And I said, when he's leaving, I said, what are you going to do? Because he really hadn't said it. And he said, I don't know. I'll have to go there and figure it out with my mom and dad and Coach Smith. And so I was still in bed when he got back. I said, what are we doing? And he's kind of walked right by me and says, I'm going to NBA. And he said, that's the best decision. And then so I said, okay, congratulations, all that stuff. So it was very nonchalant, really. I don't think he really wanted to leave Chapel Hill. I don't think he felt like he'd come back another year. And because that team in 84, I mean, Coach Smith used to say it's one of the better teams he's ever coached that didn't win it. We were very talented. We went 21-0 and lost to Arkansas and Pine Bluff. And then I think we lost to Indiana and Atlanta. I think it's when we had 48 teams in the tournament then. But, you know, him, Michael coming back, I'm sure we'd probably been number one in the country. But anyway, he made the right decision. But it's, you know, it's when you were talking about the two guys, Brad and Michael, it's interesting now. We look, here are two guys in NASCAR now. Michael owns his team with Denny Hamlin, and Brad owns a team with a couple. And I just remember having some conversations because Michael with Brad loved it. Brad was over 43 because of Richard Petty. You know, we kind of grew up in Asheville there, and you kind of, you know, Friday nights you go to Amboy Road to see the race and the guys, and then go down to Hickory on Saturday. So you kind of followed it a lot. And then Michael's dad was really into it because after we won a national championship, I went to the World 600 with my dad and my grandfather, and Michael's dad came with Michael. And that's when Michael, he really fell in love with it at the time. So it's interesting. You kick that back to 1982 or 83 in those days when we'd have a conversation about racing, and which Brad was more advanced than Michael at the time to talk about. And now here we are this day, both those guys are in NASCAR and own teams. So of course, being North Carolina, you have to follow it and everything like that. It's interesting how both of them are in the NASCAR scene.
It's also, you know, while you were talking, I thought about how Michael is really impacted for the five major sports, you know, in our country. Basketball, right? I mean, the greatest basketball player of all time. His baseball career, right? You know, his love for baseball, and his father would have wanted him to play baseball when he was alive. And he felt that after his father tragically passed away, it was so shocking and so sad. And, you know, everybody was really reeling at that time and, you know, feeling for him and his family and the Tar Heel community, that, you know, he wanted to play baseball to honor his father. And that, you know, Terry Francona said, and Terry Francona's daughters went to Chapel Hill. And I remember, you know, they were students when I was a student there. And Terry Francona said that if Michael probably had 1,000 more at-bats, he would make it to, you know, Major League Baseball. He got up to Double A, but then he realized that, hey, I'm going to come back. And he did, and win another 3 championships. And so he obviously impacted baseball. And then his love for golf. You know, Davis Love III being one of the most recognizable, most accomplished golfers in Tar Heel history. And, you know, his friendship with Davis Love III. And obviously, you know, Davis Love III. And then you think about with racing and then the connection with Brad Doherty and that, you know. And so other than hockey and other than football, which if you go on YouTube, there's a YouTube video of Michael probably in his early Chicago Bulls days, probably looks like it, like early 90s. Video, he's throwing a football like 65-70 yards. You know, I think he's in someone's backyard, and that you can find the video on YouTube. And it's like, it's unbelievable that people, you know, think of Bo Jackson or Deion Sanders or Brian Jordan. They think of guys who were able to excel at the highest levels with 2 sports. But honestly, if you look at Michael's career, if basketball wasn't such a demanding sport, and you know, when you win 6 NBA championships in 8 years and, you know, all the dominance in the 80s and 90s, I don't know, even if he did make it to Major League Baseball and he excelled there, then we would have been robbed of 3 more NBA championships and witnessing his greatness with the Bulls. So it's, I believe you can say that Michael Jordan is a de facto 2-3 sport athlete because of how much he has excelled in golf, although he didn't play professionally, or even how much he excelled in baseball, or what he could have excelled if he decided to stay longer. Is that fair to say, Buzz?
Yeah, it is. It is. He's made an impact on all those sports you talked about. I mean, I can tell you stories about Davis Love and I can tell you stories about the baseball. Davis Love and I were in a class together in Chapel Hill in 1984 when we lost early in a tournament. Davis would park at Granville South there, and I told him where to park. So, because he lived down at the golf course, so he'd drive up, park. We walked together, and walked back to class. And one afternoon after we lost, we walked back. Said Davis, "What is your day like?" He said, "Well, I'll go back. I'll hit balls today and do some putting, chipping, whatever, and then play 18 tomorrow, whatever." He said, "You want to come out?" I said, "Davis, I used to swing a club in the yard. I mean, but I'm not very good." He said, "Yeah, come on." So we got back to the room. And of course, coach had given us several days off there. And Michael's in there. And I said, Mike, I introduced him to Davis and everything. I said, "I'm going to head down to the golf course with Davis." He says, "For what?" I said, "I'm going to hit some golf balls with him." He says, hey, can I come along? I said, yeah, come on, come on. Dave was at mine. So that's when we got going in golf in 1984 after losing it. And then he became hooked. And of course, I had too. I love it. But I didn't have enough money to build my own golf course or anything like that. So, you know, just how he's impacted with Davis for the golf, the Ryder Cup and all that stuff, how he's involved with it now. And a lot of those golfers are members at Grove 23. How influential he is with NASCAR now as the owner and with having three drivers now. And he's made a huge impact there. So, and of course, the impact he's made with basketball says enough. So, I mean, you could probably go into what Brand Jordan or whatever his company's done for soccer. And, you know, you look at baseball now, you see the guys with the Jumpman logo on the chest and everything. So he has put his mark on a lot of things. And one I never thought would have been NASCAR, but it was his dad's love for racing that really got him into it. And then Brad telling him all about the race and everything. And as Michael says, well, they just keep driving left. They just keep turning left all the time. And so, but now he's learned there's a lot more to it than just that.
Yeah. And also, you know, those practices at UNC too, right? Going head to head with people like Sam Perkins and James Worthy. And James Worthy says, I was the best player for about 2 weeks, he was saying. And you got to see, you know, Michael as a freshman be like the best player in that competitive drive and competitive spirit. And I'm sure you got to see a lot of exciting, you know, one-on-one interactions.
Yeah. You know, you saw it coming. And when he hit the shot to win the national championship in 82, you saw the confidence level pick up in the pickup games.
Yes.
Now, we were playing Woolen Gym a lot. And, you know, we'd have maybe two or three courts. And sometimes we'd invite the guys over at Duke, because Duke was coming around then. That's with Johnny Dawkins, Mark Allery, Tom Amica. Those guys were getting better. You know, the pros would come back. Al Wood, Walter Davis, those guys. And Michael's going against them. And they having a hard time stopping him. That, from that shot, playing against those guys, it elevated his confidence level so much. You know what? And the one guy that could guard him about as well as anybody in those pickup games that we let play with us because we were scared to death of him was Lawrence Taylor. LT, wow. Tremendous lateral movement, tremendous athlete, could jump 6'3", strong, whatever. And so LT played with us. And that's probably one guy Michael feared while he's out there playing. So, but that helped his confidence. And then I'll never forget this. We're in, I believe, Greece. Our junior year, it's been an 83-84 season. We played an Italian team that had Scott May on it, who was the player of the year at Indiana and in college that year and everything. And so I think Michael went for like 32, 34 points in that game. We won. That's a lot back then. So we would score high 60s, low 70s. So to get 30-something was pretty impressive. And the way he got it was very impressive. He got through, you know, offensive rebounds, driving, and making mid-range shots, all that stuff. It's just the way he was scoring and playing on defense. We went into the locker room, Garrett, changed uniforms, ate a candy bar, and went out and played a Yugoslavian team that was very talented. And it was players. I mean, I wish I knew you could name some of the players, but there were some very good players. And Michael went for 34 again points. And I remember walking out of that arena with Coach Williams. I said, Coach, I said, that was impressive back-to-back games by my roommate. He says, ooh, who you telling? And I said, let me ask you something. I said, you think he has a chance to be one of the best of all time or rank up there with some of the best? He says, he calls me Bauer, my middle name, Bauer. He said, Bauer? He says, I tell you, he may be one of the best of all time. If he continues to grow and grow, and said, but he's got a chance. He said that was impressive. So just that moment there, those two games, always knew he was very good. But at that time, I knew from then on, there's no one better. There's no one better at that time. When he got to the NBA, I was like, oh, hold on, watch out. Because he's going to change that league, which he did, because there was Magic and Bird and those guys. But he stepped up there and it was a match with them and everything. And then I think the next game I remember was the Boston game. We had like 60-something.
The 63 points, which is a playoff record.
Yeah, was that like his second, third year, one of those years?
It was the second year, and as you know very well, he broke his foot.
Yeah.
And when he came back, I mean, to drop 63 points on the Boston Celtics. They lost 135 to 131, but Michael had 63. That was the game where Larry Bird said that, you know, it's God disguised as Michael Jordan. And
yeah, I remember that game. And to me, that was another stepping stone. And that was probably, you know, from there. So, you know, it's just, you know, and I don't know how I got off on that, but yeah, there's points that I can remember that, hey, this guy is going to be the best.
And Michael Jordan said that that shot changed everything for him. He went from Mike Jordan to Michael Jordan. And, you know, destiny, I mean, that's the way it was written. I mean, him winning the national championship, you know, you winning the national championship, everybody on that team winning the title for Coach Smith, winning that first one for Coach Smith, how much that meant so much. And that shot really transformed his career, but it transformed your life, Buzz. It transformed everybody because you were a part of that team. And, you know, Michael, yes, he made the shot, but in order for him to make that shot, each one of you had a role to play that season, playing with him and Coach Smith and Coach Guthridge and Coach Vogler and Coach Williams. Everybody had a role, the whole staff. I mean, whether it's an NBA championship, an NCAA championship, any type of championship, I mean, when a team collectively wins a title, it's because their individual talents were able to, you know, really coexist together and harmonize. And you talk about the relationship building, the visceral nature of all of that had to happen the way it did. And then also knowing that it was such a heartbreaking loss from the year before, losing to Bob Knight and Isaiah Thomas, you know, with the University of Indiana team, but that you and Michael came in at the right time to bolster what already, you know, a Sam Perkins and a James Worthy and unfortunately Al Wood left the year before because he graduated. But, you know, the fact that, you know, he helped build that team for you guys, you know, that you guys carried the torch to win that title. And, you know, in the remaining time that we have left, tell me about what your family means to you. And, you know, we're talking offline in preparation for this interview and, you know, talking about how you relocated from the Lake Norman area to Tennessee outside of Knoxville and how much, you know, your family means to you, your grandkids, and just from a relationship building aspect of like who you are today and how much family means so much.
We were in Lake Norman area and I thought I would never leave there. Developed some golfing buddies there I still stay in touch with. And we go over to Europe and play in the summer times. But yeah, we followed our grandkids, two of our grandkids over to Knoxville. Our oldest daughter, Nicole, lives in Cullowhee. Her husband, Jackson Simmons, who played at North Carolina.
Yeah, Jackson Simmons, yes.
Is an assistant coach at Western Carolina. So we follow Western very closely. They have a son. His name is Stone. He's probably 8 or 9 months old. And he's going to be a big one. He's got size on him already. He's a little infant. And then our middle child, Olivia, her husband played baseball at NC State. So you can imagine how that works out. So they have two children and one on the way. They have a boy and a girl. And then our son, Rob, he was assistant coach at East Tennessee State a couple years ago and got out of it. And it works for a company called Folds of Honor, who supports military veterans and to help house them and everything. So he works with them. And also, he's kind of a sports agent on the side also. So he stays in basketball. And he's got a little boy and a little girl. His little boy is Robert Bauer Peterson IV. So as four of us there. But Jan and I have been blessed to have been married with Jan for 35 years. And she grew up in Mars Hill, North Carolina, above Asheville there. And things going well to this day right now. What I'm doing, I'm consulting for North Carolina for the men's basketball program. And I spend time down there two or three times a month to go visit with them and help Coach Davis and help Jim Tanner with the future of the basketball, whether it's NIL, international kids, or with the high school kids. So anyway, it keeps me busy. But yeah, things are going very well for us right now. And just cross fingers that North Carolina has a very good year this year. And I'm looking forward to the season started. I went to Cherokee last weekend, watched them in an inter-squad game. I was very impressed. Watched them tonight against Brigham Young. And then next week I'll head down for a home opener against Central Arkansas in Kansas on Friday.
That's great. And that's wonderful to hear about, you know, you being married 35 years to your wife. And I'm going to be celebrating my 5th wedding anniversary with my wife. And marriage is the best decision any man could make, you know, choosing the right person. So I'm so glad that you've been blessed these 35 years with your spouse. And, you know, I'm 37, so I'm younger, but you being 37 at one time, you know what it's like to have a young family and going through the different chapters with young children going to school and eventually going off to college. And that's why I love talking to people who are older and from previous generations, because you know, you learn so much wisdom and gain so much insight. So I really appreciate talking to you. And I'm so happy that you're involved with the program and consulting for them. And what do you love about Coach Davis and him leading the program? You know, he had a great first start getting to the national championship game when he took over for Coach Williams. But what do you love about Hubert, another Carolina graduate, and another, you know, Dean Smith's, you know, former player and had so much success?
I've had fortunately had the opportunity to listen to Coach Davis in his meetings with the team out on the floor. I've watched him and been very impressed. I've seen a lot of coaches, coach or whatever, but I think Coach Davis does a tremendous job, and I'm just so fortunate and blessed that he's given me the opportunity to help them out. A lot of things what I do, Garrett, is I evaluate. So I spend a lot of time scouting international kids, college kids on other teams, high school kids on film. I go to North Carolina games, not all of them. I'll go to the majority of them, but most time what I'll be doing is behind the scenes and watching tape. I'll sit at my desk where I'm sitting right now. Got a big screen right there that I can put on and watch. And I love that. I love just watching evaluation of players. Now, you got to change focus a lot, because for so many years I was watching X and O's and all that stuff. So now you're watching talent. But when I watch North Carolina, a lot of times I have a tendency to watch the X and O part just to see what they're doing. And because I want to make sure that I recommend players that fit the style that Coach Davis wants to play and his staff, and not to get somebody in there that don't fit the way they're playing. So I think this team they had this year has got a chance. They got a chance to be a pretty good team. So it just depends on how they gel throughout the days. But basketball is my blood. Garrett, it's just hard to get rid of it. I do have other hobbies. Spend a lot of time with my grandkids and my kids, but I do love to play golf. My wife's going to kill me if I join another country club or whatever, get another membership. She's going to kill me. But some about the competition. It's not so much about the people you're playing. It's a competition against the course, what you're playing against. As a young kid playing basketball, that was, you know, you love to compete. And that's, to this day, at 62 years old, I love it.
Yeah, and I'm sure preparing for the Duke rivalry, you know, as a consultant and – is more or less different than when you had to prepare for the Duke rivalry as a player. I mean, it's still the same intensity, the same emotions, the same passion, the storied rivalry you have with Duke and NC State, obviously Duke being the primary rivalry, and but having great, you know, games nonetheless going up against State for all these decades, but different preparation.
It's totally different. I mean, I'm just watching talent-wise for the future and everything, watching players. I'm not a guy that's in there making decisions, closing deals, all that stuff. But back when I was playing, believe it or not, the rivalry back then was Virginia with Ralph Sampson. That was, I mean, if you want to see lines of people waiting on tickets, they went way back when Ralph was there. That's when Duke was kind of, Krzyzewski just got the job and he started building. And it didn't take him long. With about 3 years, he had a good product on the floor. State was always really good. I mean, they had good teams. Yeah, they won it our sophomore year in 83. They won it. So it's just, it's amazing. When you talk to people outside from other parts of the country or internationally, they're amazed how close these three schools are. But it's the relationships. You know, I saw David Henderson last week, and we just kind of laugh about things. And he was at practice, and there's some other people there. And I said, because we had a pro day there, and I said, hey, everybody can go upstairs and get a meal, but David, not you. You can't. You got to go somewhere else. You can't eat here, or I'm going to charge you. But it's all teasing. It's all teasing. I have a lot of respect for the program at Duke, NC State, all of them. They do a tremendous job. You know, to this day, that you still keep a lot of ties and relationship with those former players at other schools.
Of course, of course. And any final words on relationship building? Any final words, a summation of what we discussed and, you know, in all categories? What, you know, what stands out to you, Buzz, is, you know, the final words for my audience and me at home about what relationship building, why it matters in life, in every aspect of our being?
I'll sum this up this way. When I was coaching here at University of Tennessee in 2001, 2005, and my early days there coaching, I have a day timer, and to this day, I still have a day timer, a two-page calendar of the day, a two-page monthly, everything. And I started out with my tutor convinced me to do that at North Carolina back in early 80s, and I still have this day. It sits on my desk. It's my desk right now. I'm looking at it. And my office in Knoxville there, Pat Summit, came into my office. I wasn't there. And she looked at it. And I'd have the schedule, my whole schedule out for the whole day. And I saw her later on that day. And she says, hey, I noticed on your calendar today, tomorrow, whatever, you don't have any meetings with your players. And I said, yeah, Pat, I don't. I'm running crazy. Got me speaking here and there. I got to prepare for this game. I said, Buzz, let me tell you something right now. You better have a really good, very, very good relationship with your players. Because when it's all said and done, you're on that floor. Those young men are fighting, competing for you. If they don't know you have your best interest and you don't have a good relationship with them, it's not going to work. I said, well, Pat, what do you do? She says, well, I make sure every day, at least one or two players, I'm going to meet in my office or I'm going to meet them at my house. Sometimes I like meeting at my house to get away from the office setting to see, let them see how she lived and everything. And so I say all that about the communication skills have got to be strong with people around you. If you're a head coach and got your team, you better have strong ties and communication skills to your players. And it's easy to have those when things are going well. But when things are going against adverse situations, that's when they need to be stronger. And that's when you better have good relationships with the young men or young women when you're in competing and everything. So my advice to a lot of people is communicate. And also, when you communicate as a leader, be a very good listener. And I think that I can go back to some people I met from Pat Summit to Coach Smith, Coach Guthrie, whoever, Philip Fulmer, all the successful people in coaching, they were very good listeners. And that helped them out a lot.
Well, thank you for this wonderful conversation. Really appreciate all your words of wisdom. It means a lot that you would take this time and share with me and talk about relationship building and, you know, everything that we discuss, you know, with the Carolina basketball family, the transformative success of the program, your integral part in it, your relationship with Coach Smith, Coach Fogler, Coach Williams, Coach Guthridge, Michael, Jordan, and everything that you've done with the Hornets and everything that you do for the state of North Carolina and for the basketball program today. I want to thank you again for your time. Buzz Peterson, my 95th guest on the Wave Capital's guest speaker series on relationship building in a team environment, a national champion in life, and an elite relationship builder. Thank you again, Buzz, for your time.
Thank you, Garrett. Appreciate it. Really enjoyed it.
Really enjoyed it as well. Take care.